This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. You got me, Kevin Hagelin, Corey Majors, and Alec Bedford. I have seen some people requesting that, hey, people are sad here in the Metroplex. Can you reach out to Mike Bassick in Oakland? We definitely can. Does that mean?
I already did this morning.
Okay, did he say he's not going to be on the show?
I just wanted to see if he had any questions for Boach. And okay. He said, you ask good questions, stop texting me. So I was like, all right.
Oh.
Whatever, Mike. So
wasn't totally a compliment sandwich, but it was we were on our way.
So if you wanted to laugh, that's how the relationship we have with Mike.
Okay, all right, I'm excited. So
I'm just assuming if I said, "Hey, Mike, do you want to make some people laugh?" He would say they can laugh when I talk tonight on the baseball broadcast.
I could definitely see that. I think that is a very fair assertion about how that's going to play out. All right, so my question here to start it off, and I hope this makes sense to everybody. Is it actually a good thing the Cowboys are playing the Giants next? Now, the Cowboys play the Giants tomorrow, and not everyone, I'm sure, will share this opinion, but I guess I'm of the thought that the Cowboys are going to pummel the Giants.
Okay.
Now, I know you're going to get some predictions tomorrow morning that will not agree with that, but I still don't think the Giants are good. I still don't think the Cowboys look that good, but I think they're going to smoke the Giants. And then we're going to have to listen to a week plus of, see, we're fine. We just throttled a divisional team. This team is going to be just fine, which I think is a giant waste of time because it falls back into the pattern of Cowboys beat the bad teams and lose to the good team.
Yeah, Kevin, I wish I could say I was as confident as you.
Okay.
The Giants in their history under Brian Daboll and before that too have been bumbling idiots, right? Like, they've looked bad.
Yeah.
They made the playoffs the first season under Daboll. That was a really good effort by them to overachieve that year. Since then, they've just kind of fallen by the wayside. I feel like, though, they are going to be a different look defensively than we're used to. And with Malik Nabers and Singletary in play here, Kevin, it kind of concerns me a little bit. So I'm not as willing at the moment to say that I think they're going to pummel them. As I've done more research,
yes,
here are a couple things. This morning I saw this, Kevin, from Dan Rogers over, I think that's Blogging the Boys. He said, Daniel Jones, fifth most QB designed runs. Devin Singletary has forced the third most missed tackles this season. You like that? Those numbers?
Yeah. Not for us.
The Cowboys' defense has given up the third most yards on missed tackles, and they've also allowed the most rushing yards on design quarterback runs this year. So if you want to attack the Cowboys' defense, which has yet to prove that they can stop those things, that's the way to do it, and that's their best way, their best approach to set up big plays to Malik Nabers. That's one thing. The other thing that I'm a little concerned about is on the defensive side of the ball, they have guys that can get to the quarterback. You pointed out the pressures they had yesterday. The Cowboys' offensive line is not up to par yet completely. And then in the secondary, they do things that give Dak Prescott fits. So all these things being said, the schemes that you see and on offense, what they've done and the scheme poorness of the Cowboys' defense so far, they don't set up well. I think it's going to be a closer game than we expect.
I want to make this clear, the word I'm using, Corey. The word I'm going to use is interesting, okay? Not good. Interesting.
All right.
I think it would be way more interesting if the Cowboys lost this game. All right. I said interesting.
877-881-1053.
No, whatever.
Do you agree that you want the Cowboys to lose like Kevin just said?
That is not what I said.
I thought you were a Steelers fan, man.
No.
I think there are more people going to be on your side here, Kevin. I don't know why you're arguing right now.
Okay. I didn't say good. I didn't say want to. I said interesting because this is my take on it, right? So, like, let's say it goes my scenario, right? And the Cowboys just thump the Giants. Like, they beat them by 20, 24 points, whatever the case is. Then, like I said, you're going to get the narrative all week, week and a half of, look, we're fine. I know we had a tough couple go in the middle there, but did you see what we did to the Giants? Did you see what we did to Cleveland? And then after that game, you're at Pittsburgh, host Detroit, at San Francisco. I could make a decent argument. You'll be underdogs in all three of those games, all right? And then you're going to fall right back into the trap of beat a crap team, lose to a good team. Now, again, why you use the word interesting. I do not even want to look at the fan text right now.
Do you want me to read some of these?
Sure.
All right, here we go, Kevin. I'm in a dilemma. Oh, hold on, that's a different one.
That's not about your question.
Now Kevin loves the Giants and the Steelers.
No.
Oh, from the 903, Team Kevin. From the 817, they are actively rooting for the Cowboys to lose to New York.
That's not my team.
From the 903, they want them to lose 72-0 every game possible until Jerry and Steven resign. From the 682, let's go full pandemonium. And then from the 214, for the 817, not going to lie, bring the chaos. We ain't winning this year anyways.
Okay.
And then here, Kevin, from the 214, Corey, why does Kevin hate the Cowboys? He's been hanging with Mike after work, I think.
Okay, that is a fair point. I want to make it clear, all right? I want to make it clear. I said interesting. So the people who are texting in, I'm Team Kevin, I also want them to lose. That is not what I said. That is not what I said at all. Just hear me out for one freaking second. If they lose, the reason why I said interesting is because you can't fall back on that tired trope, right? You can't.
We're good in the regular season.
Exactly. And you can't fall back on, those last two games were an anomaly. This is who we really are in a game that really mattered in the division. If you lose to a Giants team that was winless before last week and they beat hapless Cleveland, then you really have to take a look in the mirror. Then you really have to say, hey, we're 1-3. We're probably going to be underdog in our next three games. And hell, if you lose that game, you might be underdog in your next four games. And
we're nobody's underdog.
And we have huge problems. Now, does that actually mean the Cowboys are going to deal with those huge problems? I don't know about that. But I think that will put more pressure on the we like our guys, we like our personnel team.
Okay. That has been what you just laid out was my biggest offseason fear. And that was that some things start to crack. And I don't think that this team, honestly, because they haven't proven it, I don't think that they are capable of overcoming dissension within the locker room and within the coaching staff. I don't think they're a strong enough group to say, we're doing this together. I think there are some guys in there that are big time individuals. And then there are a lot of guys in there that are trying to pull on their things, and they're trying to pull on their the ropes to get everybody on the same page with them. But other guys are like, I'm not going with you here, man. And if you have that in the locker room and you don't have a bunch of guys that are all hungry for the same thing together and keep failing like this, then it could be McCarthy gone quick. So that's what was my biggest fear for this, because if they're really trying to push this team to go do something special instead of saying, you know what, we're building for, 3 years down the road, which they might be always doing. Hey, we're trying to do this, but we're also trying to build for 3 years at the same time. They never really have a true identity of what they want. Then that could be they could fall apart, man.
And so that's why I do like this text. Hold on. Kevin hates the Cowboys and he hates Team Kevin. I'm very confused.
The 817, why is it always the first segment of the day that you try to get us to root against the Cowboys?
I'm not letting that person rile me up like last week. I remember that person. Absolutely. Congratulations. Last Friday, you pissed me off. All right. So look, I'm going to be honest about it. So, and this is why I kind of wish you were playing the Lions this week. Or, I mean, I know San Francisco's run into its own woes as of late, but even San Francisco or maybe the Eagles or something like that. Because then if you win, you could really say, hey, I think this is a good team and we had two slip ups. But instead you're playing the Giants. I'm telling you, even if the Cowboys win this game by 40 points,
doesn't make any difference to you.
It makes a difference in terms of, hey, I'm glad we won. But I don't think it makes a difference in terms of the team is fixed. And that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried that it's 37-3 or something like that. And you just throttle them, you stuff them defensively, and all the things that you were worried about go away for this Thursday night game against a weak opponent. And then everybody is like, did you see what we did to the Giants? Did you see what we did to the Giants? We're good, we're good, we're good. And then you go into this really rough three-game stretch, not really prepared to address the issues that this team actually has. That's my biggest concern.
From the 682, this is from Santos. Wait, if Kevin is Cowboys keep losing, you know you'll lose the bet, and I'm not bringing food to the station. So what's going on here? Why are you rooting for them?
I want the Cowboys to win. I just said it would be more interesting if they did lose.
From the 817, so nice to see a fellow Steelers fan in Kevin.
Baby. Okay. But like.
And then from the 817 as well, should have seen this coming.
No.
With how much Kevin hates Evan Carter.
No. What? No.
Remember you were like, he can't jump. Is he? Why is he griping at the umpires so much?
I said he shouldn't jump. All right. I didn't say he can't jump. I said he shouldn't have jumped. All right. But like, seriously, you guys get my point, right? That if they win this game tomorrow night, and if they win it emphatically, they're just going to backslide on all the talk the last 2 weeks about being more disciplined, practicing better, and all that stuff. We get one real practice this week. Mm-hmm. And are we going to have to hear if they win this game? We had a great week of practice. One day.
Yeah.
And so I just don't want them to backslide and ignore all the real problems from these last two games.
Yeah, and all those real problems are the things you're hearing the players talk about right now.
Yes, which I appreciate very much.
You know, when you're hearing guys say that they're not paying attention to details, you hear Dak Prescott say he had a bad practice before the Ravens game. You hear these guys, you know, all these little things that, why is that happening in a football season? You have a limited window where you have to concentrate and focus on football. The rest of the time, you can do whatever you want in your off season. I know you're going to be working out, you're going to be preparing, you might be rehabbing, but you have a limited window where you have to lock it in and just be prepared for this moment. And you can't pay attention to the details. I don't need to be paying you to be on the football team.
Yeah.
If I'm Jerry Jones, that's the way I'm taking that. I don't need you to be on this team if you can't lock it in for this amount of weeks and then hope that you can do something even better in the playoffs trying to get to a Super Bowl.
I hope this makes sense, which I've clearly failed at this morning already. But somebody said, do you think the team doesn't fully believe in Dak? I don't necessarily believe that, but let's even say they did. Isn't Dak now in the category of the Jones family where it doesn't really matter what we think? It's not going to change. You know, like we've said for a long time, like, hey, you can want Steven or Jerry or whoever gone all you want. It's not going to change. It's the same thing with Dak right now. If people want to complain about Dak, like, that's fine. You can't change that. At least for several years, you can't change that. Now, McCarthy, you could, whether or not you want to give a contract to this person or this person. Like, I think I've started to focus in on things that could actually change. And I know people get annoyed about Dak or they love Dak or anywhere in between. That's just not going to change.
Okay. I agree with you on that it's not going to change at this point. And that was one of the reasons I was like, all right, it's time to move on.
Yes.
Because maybe your team doesn't believe in this guy.
You might be right.
But at this point, because Jerry Jones said you're back, you're going to be the quarterback for the next however many years, maybe until you can't walk anymore or all those things. The other question I do have about that, though, not necessarily about Dak, how long do teams typically believe in coaches? Because when you're winning and you're successful as an organization, look at Mike Tomlin.
Yeah.
Everybody that walks in that door believes that Mike Tomlin is going to guide them to wins. Everybody in that room, when Belichick was there for a long period of time, that dynasty was what it was because they believed that Bill Belichick was setting them up for the most success.
Yeah.
And with this team and the propensity of Jerry Jones and the Cowboys to move on from coaches in a turnstile manner after 4 years of lack of success, then it feels like you go, okay, that's been your time. We don't need to believe in you anymore because it's not working for us. And I think the players, they might check out on that because they might not believe that it gets them any further because they've failed at getting past the next place.
Yes.
So is it that part of you that's like, you know what? Am I doing my job to help that guy do his job as well?
I think Mike Tomlin would probably be more media savvy than this, but I can imagine if he was the coach of the Cowboys, he's like, are you kidding me? I get Dak Prescott as my quarterback. Well, hell yeah, we're going to win the Super Bowl. Like, he probably would want to stop short of that, but you look at his quarterbacks.
Stability at quarterback has always been one of the other key features there.
Yeah, and I wonder if people go to the Steelers and they're like, this coach is going to get the most out of us. I don't know how many players feel that way with McCarthy. I know the counter argument is going to be, he won a Super Bowl. They've won 36 regular season games in the last 3 years. I understand all of that. But if you think winning in the regular season is getting the most out of your team, well, I just happen to disagree with that. And I wonder how many players come here and they're like, it's the Cowboys. That's awesome. And how many come here saying, I need to play for Mike McCarthy because that's my guy.
Yeah. And that's what you want. Or I need to play for Mike Zimmer because that's my guy. Kevin, somebody asked who the leading passer in the NFL is this year. And I'll go back to this. Yards aren't points. So your 800, your leading passer in yards right now has gotten a lot of yards. Right now, Sam Darnold has 8 touchdowns. Josh Allen has 7 touchdowns. Derek Carr has 6. Those teams right there have 1 loss on their record right now. Like those are the teams, the ones that are scoring points. That's what I want you to look at. Is your offense producing points? Not just is your offense getting a lot of yards each game.
Yeah, no, I agree. And if that's what we're going by, look up at the QBR. Where is he in that? 22nd?
I'll go look, Kevin. There's no numbers next to it.
Okay.
It's low. It's behind Will Levis.
It's something. Okay. Well.
Oh, hold on.
That I don't agree with.
Yeah, sorry about that. That was a little bit off there.
I will definitely take Dak over Will Levis by a great, great margin. But
oh, crap. Where'd he go?
That's the counter argument that I would throw out there.
I don't see him on the list.
Okay, well, he has to exist somewhere on the list. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's talk with senior Giants writer for The Athletic, Dan Duggan, right here on 105.3 The Fan. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan right now. Let's talk with senior Giants writer for The Athletic. It is Dan Duggan. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How you doing?
People are kind of panicking around here a little bit, but I'm doing okay. What I was curious about to start things off, how has Daniel Jones done such a better job of handling pressure the last 2 games? Because you look at the game, you look at the numbers between that first game and these last 2, it is quite different.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's wild. I mean, after that first game, it looked like, oh boy, are we on Drew Lock watch already? Because he was just totally rattled. I mean, now granted, that first week is tough to evaluate because, you didn't think the Vikings were going to be a very good team. And now you see they're kind of doing that week in, week out. And so maybe that was more about just the scheme Brian Flores threw at him. But he just looked jittery, looked uncomfortable. It was really a mess. And so you're saying, like, this is a guy who didn't look good last year. Like, what's going on here? Settled things down a little bit against Washington. Not a great defense, but still, it was at least a step in the right direction. And then against a very good Cleveland defense, he was dicing them up in the first half. Now, the second half, they kind of hung on for dear life, but he was 17 for 19 in that first half, and definitely much calmer under pressure. That's not easy defense to go against. Miles Garrett is in your lap all day, and he stood in there, made some tough throws. He also did a really good job navigating the pocket and making plays either with his legs or getting a little checkdowns out to his receiver. So, yeah, I mean, how do you do it? I don't know, because, again, I was like, this guy might just be done. I mean, we've seen quarterbacks who get that kind of, like, just lost and jittery feeling in the pocket, and, sometimes you never come back from that. So the fact that he's rebounded so well in such a short period of time is certainly encouraging. I mean, and listen, it's far from perfect, but, again, it was like it was doomsday. You talk about panic and doubt. It was like, oh, my goodness, this guy might not be able to play quarterback anymore after week one, and at least he's kind of settled that talk down.
I know that Malik Nabers is everything that we thought he was when he was at LSU and when he was going into the draft, but why would they throw the ball to Malik Nabers this week when they know they can run the ball against the Dallas Cowboys?
That's a good point. I think the game plan against Dallas has to be, we're going to run until they prove they can stop it, because obviously they haven't proven that in any game. At the same time, I mean, yeah, Malik Nabers has been, as good as advertised. It was kind of ridiculous in that Washington game. He had 18 targets. The rest of the team had 9. I mean, that's just like the proportions there are so crazy for a guy playing a second NFL game. But he's backed it up. I mean, he's been super productive. He is, and the next in that long line of just LSU monster wide receivers, obviously the Giants and the Cowboys to an extent, are very familiar with one who kind of had his coming out party against Dallas 10 years ago. So there's even some parallels there.
Yes, but, yes. We all remember that catch, too. Thank you.
Hey, Dallas won the game, which is obviously the footnote of that story. But no, I mean, I wasn't here for Odell's rookie year or second year. I came in third year. He was already established. So I didn't get to really live like the arc of it. But when he was at his peak, Neighbors already feels like he's approaching that territory. That's how good he's been. So, yes, I don't think you're going to want to lean too much into that, you know, because the pass rush could still cause problems. And, you know, Diggs is dangerous out there. That'll be a fun matchup between those two for whatever reason. They seem to have a little beef. But, yeah, run the ball against Dallas until they prove they can stop it. And then, sure, you can take some shots to Neighbors. And hopefully, for the Giants' sake, that's a combination that gets a much-needed and long-awaited W against Dallas. It's been a while.
Yeah, the what the Saints did and what the Ravens did, is that something that Singletary and Dable's offense can replicate?
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's not as good as, you know, Derrick Henry and Alvin Kamara. But, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, that Washington game, they ran the ball well, and there were some big holes. I mean, granted, that Washington defense isn't anything to write home about. They really couldn't get the run game going against Cleveland. It's funny, even if you look at his stat line, it's really inflated by that last run where he, you know, screwed all the overbetters and fantasy owners when he went down the 1 yard line. But that was a 43-yard run. Other than that, I think he had like 15 carries for 22 yards. So certainly, it's not like this well-oiled machine on the ground. But he's been good. I mean, he's a real shifty guy. He makes the first guy miss a lot. He's got those really, you know, quick jump cuts in the hole. So he's certainly capable. And I think the other element. It's Daniel Jones, for a guy coming back for torn ACL. He's shown an ability to run. And again, maybe the box score doesn't show it because he had a 20-yard run and a 9-yard run on zone read keepers called back last week. So I think that's an element that'll be in the game plan because, again, that's a big part of what makes him, you know, at least an effective quarterback when he's on top of his game. So I would expect you to see some more of that tomorrow night as well.
And it seems like he's – Daniel Jones, that is – throwing the ball a little bit deeper, especially when he gets pressured, because you automatically assume, you know, pressure means a more likely shorter throw. But it seems like he's able to not necessarily air it out, but get the ball downfield a little bit more, even when he's under pressure.
Yeah, and that's what he didn't do at all in week one. Like week one, it was just like panic and just, you know, check it down. Everything was short of the stick. Everything was just, you know, the first option was just get it out of my hand. So again, against Cleveland, he did do that more. And again, I think a lot of that is just Neighbors. Like, he just has confidence. I mean,
yeah.
The catch, I'm sure you've probably seen that highlight along the sideline where that was a bad throw. That ball should have been intercepted, and Neighbors just ripped it out of the cornerback's hands for like a 28-yard gain. So that's the type of thing that I think will encourage more of that, because that's one thing with Jones. He was very aggressive early in his career, turned the ball over a ton, and I think they just overcorrected way too much. And then he's basically been afraid to throw the ball deep because, you know, it's one of those things where it's the old saying where, like, you throw it deep or you throw the ball, only, you know, one good thing can happen and two bad things can happen. I think that's been ingrained in his mind a bit too much. I think Neighbors will loosen it up. But I will say, he's thrown it deep more. He has not connected on very many of them. That's the part that's been missing. And with Neighbors, with Jalen Hyatt, who's really been the forgotten man in this offense, they have the potential to hit big throws. They have not. He's really overthrown them pretty consistently. So if that ever gets, you know, up to speed with the rest of the offense, then they might have something, because they do have the explosive wide receivers, but just the timing hasn't been there so far.
Now, we've talked a lot about Malik Neighbors. I do just have one more question about him. Outside of the physical skills, I know it's early, but what are our thoughts about his football IQ early on? Because it seems like it's pretty darn good.
Yeah, no, that's what jumped out to me. Because, yeah, I mean, listen, you could see the first rookie minicamp practice. Like, this guy, you know, he's the way he's built, the way he runs, all of that was obvious. And it was a sixth pick in the draft for a reason. But there's been little subtle things he's done already that shows that, like, you know, this guy kind of gets it. I mean, there was a play, I think, second and goal at the 3-yard line the other day. They did a kind of a funky thing where they motioned him into the backfield. He took a wildcat snap, and the plan was to throw it to Jones on, like, kind of a Philly special type play. Cleveland didn't bite at all. So how many times have we seen, you know, non-quarterbacks in that situation either force the throw, which can be a disaster, or even now he's getting pressured, they run out of bounds, or they take a sack, and you lose 10 yards. He just, you know, wasn't a dramatically amazing play, but he just threw it out of bounds, like what a quarterback would do. But again, you got a rookie wide receiver in there having the wherewithal to do that. And then third and goal, and then he makes a phenomenal, you know, touchdown catch to show what he really is all about. But yeah, the football IQ has been impressive. Another thing he's done a lot is he'll catch a pass on like a little hitch route, and he knows where the defender is, and he spins outside. He's done that three times in the past two games and gotten big yards after the catch with that, where he just kind of seems to have a really good football sense, and it shows up in little ways like that, and it just really complements just kind of like the amazing athleticism he already, you know, it's obvious to anybody.
Since you said Jalin Hyatt's kind of been the forgotten man, what kind of challenges do you think he brings to the table for defenses?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's been a challenge for him to get on the field. I mean, he played 10 snaps the other day. In three games, he has, I believe it's 2 targets and no catches. So, yeah, he has not shown up at all. But when he's on the field, you do at least have to respect his deep speed. So, again, it's been more of a storyline here. Like, why is he not playing at all? And I think it's just as simple as Darius Slayton has been sort of like a steady guy here throughout his career, one of Daniel Jones' favorite targets. So he just kind of beat him out, and I think there's just more trust in him. But whenever Hyatt's on the field, he is a threat to take the top off the defense. If he's getting a target, it's probably going to be 20 yards plus in the air. Like, that's a guarantee. So I would think, you know, anytime he's on the field, I'm sure opposing defenses are on high alert for that. But, again, the problem is he just hasn't been on the field very much, so it hasn't really been much of a threat for other teams to contend with.
And I kind of feel like you're telling us when he is on the field, don't even worry about it. I know what you're saying, but it kind of feels like you're also like, they probably won't throw him the ball.
But no, they will. It'll be a deep shot, though. That's all I'll say. So the safety better stay on his heels, but he's not gonna, you know, route anybody up on a 3rd and 8 and, you know, make a tough catch over the middle. But 1st and 10, play fake, they will take a shot because that's the one way he can hurt you.
The Cowboys got a couple of rookies on this offensive line. Zach Martin hasn't quite been Zach Martin of late, and we're trying to figure out this offensive line right now. Well, you guys got up front with Dexter Lawrence and then Thibodeau, and how do you like having Brian Burns in this scenario as well?
Yeah, I mean, he's been a great addition off the field. Like, you know, you got a guy you don't know, comes with a big contract like that, you know how he's going to be, but he's been a really good presence. I think he's got some leadership qualities. You know, on the field, I think he found out pretty quickly, you signed that big contract and you're in New York, you're not in Carolina anymore, yeah. You don't have any sacks in the first 2 games. You know, people, the expectations are a little higher, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
So he really kind of had a breakout game against Cleveland, had his first sack, and it was a huge one. It was a strip sack late in the first half, gave the offense a short field. So instead of being, you know, 14-7 game going into the break, or even Cleveland going down and driving for a score, instead the Giants convert, and it's 21-7. So that was kind of a game-changing play, and that's what you need from a pass rusher like him. So and he's a guy, like, I wasn't panicking that he had 2 quiet games. He has a track record. You know he's going to be a good player. The issue is he needs to be a great player because they gave up what they gave up to get him. They gave him the contract, and he certainly hasn't been that yet. But, you know, I think you saw signs against Cleveland. The guy who makes everything go, though, is Dexter Lawrence. Like, he might be the best interior defensive lineman in the league now that Aaron Donald is gone. I mean, he's that much of a dominant presence. You have to double him every play, and he still gets in the backfield. That's what's just amazing about him. A guy at his size with that strength who can move like he does, he's just someone – who, again, you just have to double him every play. If you leave a rookie center on him one-on-one, it's going to be a long day. So I would assume there'll be 4 hands on him at all times. And, again, that still might not be enough. And Thibodeau, I don't group with him. I think he gets grouped with them. He's a tick below. They need to see more from him. Like, he's been okay. He's been fine. He has not been, you know, 5th overall pick good, especially when you see a guy, Aiden Hutchinson, in his draft class, who's really blossomed into, like, a Pro Bowl dominant force. Thibodeau has not been that. I mean, he's a good player, but, again, like, they need more there. So it starts with Lawrence. I think you're getting there with Burns. But the thing in Cleveland, they had all that pressure, is the new DC, Shane Bowen, like, must have, you know, found a page from Wink Martindale's playbook that got left in the locker room or something, because he blitzed, and that's not what he wants to do. But he was sending the house. You know, safeties are getting sacked. Linebackers are getting sacked. So that was a curveball he threw. I don't know that that's the way to attack, you know, Dak in this offense. But at least it's, you know, a page in their book that Dallas has to prepare for, and he knows he can go to it because it was really effective against the beat-up Browns O-line, and talking about rattled quarterback, Deshaun Watson was horrible last week. So it worked last week, and it's at least just kind of a club in his bag now that, you know, I guess he can pull out if his more preferred rush 4 play coverage, if that doesn't work against Dallas tomorrow night.
Great. I love that right there. Senior Giants writer for The Athletic, Dan Duggan, joining us right here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. I wanted to know a little more about the difference that you've seen in Shane Bowen's defense from what we've probably seen from the Giants the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, it really couldn't be more different. I mean, obviously with Wink, it was like that mad scientist. You know, you don't know who's coming, but everyone's coming. And it's just like he's always, you know, trying to overload this side and show you one thing and bring another. And a lot of man coverage, press man coverage on the outside. So, you know, you can be susceptible there to some big plays if they do block it up. Whereas, again, with Bowen, he came in, his whole approach is like, I want to rush with 4. That's why the Brian Burns trade was so important, because they didn't have enough rushers to even, you know, execute that scheme. So they went out, made the big splash, and their hope was him, Thibodeau, Dexter Lawrence would be enough up front, maybe fill in that other spot, which is still kind of a need. And it didn't work the first 2 weeks, you know, quite frankly. I mean, they got diced up by Sam Darnold, and Washington, who apparently just doesn't punt anymore. They didn't punt in that week two game. Granted, they kicked 7 field goals, but still, they moved the ball up and down the field with no problems. So again, that's where he threw a curveball. He's new here. I didn't know he had that in him, but it was a much more aggressive game plan, a lot more blitzing. Again, I don't think he's going to change his defensive philosophy over one good game even. But so I would think the game plan against Dallas will start out saying, let's see if we can get home with this front four, because we're going to need coverage. They don't have anyone who's going to match up with CeeDee Lamb. But I guess I'm saying is, if it doesn't work, maybe he at least knows he can switch it up and has had a little track record of it working. Because, again, that was not the blueprint he came into the season that we did not expect to see the game plan he unveiled against the Browns.
And, Dan, before we let you go, if there is – I think we have the edge at kicker in this game.
If
McCarthy does line up Aubrey for a 70-yarder, will you sit on the edge of your seat and maybe even pump your fist for history?
Listen, the Giants have their own issues at kicker. The guy they brought in last week missed a 48-yarder. Just like a 70-yarder. I mean, they basically lost that Washington game because they mismanaged the kicker situation where Graham Gano came into the game hurt. And then, kind of popped his hamstring trying to chase down a kickoff return for a touchdown that got called back. So, in New York, they're just hoping the PATs go through. They're not worried about 70 yarders. That's a sore spot right now. And, if this is a close game, that would be a concern, because certainly that's a spot where Dallas has the edge.
Outstanding stuff, man. Really appreciate you jumping on with us this morning, Dan.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen, Dan Duggan right here on 105.3 The Fan, senior Giants writer for The Athletic. Sounds like he did support that 70-yard field.
Kevin, somebody said stop throwing slugs at us while we're talking to the ops. We're not scared of the G-men. Look, I get it. The last two games the Cowboys have lost, so I'm a little negative. I'm a little pessimist right now, if you will. Maybe I'll get it back, and I'll be more optimistic later down the road.
Well, if not, I think we're going to throttle the Giants.
There we go.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for Baseball Buckets with Corey Majors.
Man, this is one of my favorite ones ever. A historic moment, a crappy move, and rookie hazing. Next on The Fan.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Tomorrow at 12:20, we got Tony Casillas coming up as we will get you ready for Cowboys Giants. Right now, I hope you're ready for Baseball Buckets with Corey Majors.
I appreciate that, Chuck Morgan. Thank you very much. Baseball Buckets brought to you by Peace-a-thon 2024.
Yes. I need to talk to Chuck Morgan about that.
Let's talk to Chuck Morgan about that.
Yes.
We also do have Bruce Bochy joining us at 12:20 today. Potentially the last time we talked to him this baseball season, but potentially not.
Oh.
Last night, history happened, and if you didn't see it, it's okay, because you probably weren't watching for it anyway.
I wasn't. I'm sorry.
The San Diego Padres and Los Angeles Dodgers were playing a game. You think they like each other, Kevin?
No, I don't.
No, they don't. The Padres win the game on a triple play to end the game. It was a sharp grounder to the left side by Miguel Rojas, and he showed bunt to start, Kevin. He was like, I'm going to bunt. I'm just joking. Nobody out, and it was only the third triple play to end a game in the last 30 years.
Wow. Probably the first to clinch a playoff spot,
the
right?
Padres, unsurprisingly, became the first team in Major League history to clinch a playoff spot with a game-ending triple play, according to Elias Sports Bureau.
I like it.
We talk about certain plays in games that are very exciting. I always want to say that the triple play is one of the most exciting plays, but you don't know that it's happening until it's over a lot of times.
Especially the triple play that they did it.
Yes.
The way they got it to tag at third, second, first, and not just like, hey, I caught a fly, some guy was standing right there and I tagged him. I thought it was super
cool. Or, yeah, like a catch and then a throw to get a guy at first base that already rounded second.
Yep.
There are a lot of times where you don't know the play that has happened like that in that moment, but then you clinch your playoff berth in that manner. That's really an awesome moment right there.
First time since 2006, I think, they've been in the playoffs. Wow.
Congratulations to them for finally doing it.
As long as you don't congratulate any other teams from yesterday.
I'm not going to congratulate any other teams from yesterday.
Good.
However,
I don't care if they did win the division.
I will call out a team. And I understand it a little bit, but I think it's pretty crappy of them. The Pirates.
Oh.
If you are a big fan of Rowdy, is it Tellez or Tellez? I'm going to go with Tellez. If you're a big fan of him, which obviously I am based on how I know his name, then you're probably upset that while he is making his $3 million this year, he is not going to get a $200,000 bonus. If he was to get to 425 plate appearances this year, he would have got an extra $200,000.
Ooh, nice.
This season,
well,
batting 243, which is, you know, pretty good. 13 home runs, not so great. 56 RBI, 299 on base percentage, that's not so great either. He is at 421 plate appearances this year. And the Pirates DFA'd him.
All right.
And said, sorry, buddy. We don't want to pay you that $200,000.
He was the first ever millionaire.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
I'm very conflicted about this because on the surface, I was like, oh, what a D-Wad move.
It is a D-Wad move.
And then I looked at his breakdown month by month, and his OPS this month is 458.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, holy cow, that is really terrible.
Kevin, it's the end of the year. What are the Pirates?
Poverty franchise.
They are a poverty franchise.
They can't afford this.
Yeah, man. Like that. That just
pay Paul Skeens eventually.
Oh boy, do they! And they're also eliminated from the playoffs.
Yeah,
it's not like they're fighting for their lives here. They could have just been like, "Look, we'll give you the extra four plate appearances, and then we'll move on from you in that instance." But they said, "We got to save $200,000."
What are they, the Mavs with the salary cap back in the day?
Sorry, we cannot draft Giannis Antetokounmpo because we could get Dwight Howard.
Yeah, we could save $57,000.
That's ridiculous. I've never liked that in baseball, how those things, you can be that close to something. And people leverage those things in contracts. That's one of the reasons I don't like incentive-laden contracts a lot of times.
I want to make this clear. I don't think this happened. What if they told this dude, we're going to cut you. You're not going to get your bonus, but we're going to let you smash $200,000 worth of stuff with your bat. Would that make you feel any better?
If that's what he wants?
Probably just wants the money, right?
You would love that.
I would love that.
You would go into a room wearing a hazmat suit with the glasses, the protective eyewear, and you would shatter things all day long. How long do you think that would last for you? Not the shattering part. But how long would that satisfy Kevin's rage?
Probably for a while.
Just give me an estimate.
2 weeks.
Good God. $200,000 worth of stuff?
Yeah.
2 weeks?
I got a lot of rage inside me.
That seems ridiculous. And then after that 2 weeks, phone calls after every show, Alec. Be prepared for
it. No. No, that resets the rage-o-meter. It doesn't mean that in 2 weeks I'm going to start raging again. It's at 2 weeks the rage-o-meter probably begins again. And then you got a while to build up before I just flip out.
And what do you flip? How do you flip out?
Well, I like to yell and hit inanimate objects.
Okay. You know what, though? Impressive. Not animate objects.
Mm.
That's good. Because if that means people or dogs. And we don't want a Kevin walking around hitting people and dogs. I don't like it. I don't think it's good. I don't think it's good for sports in general. Because managers, GMs of any sport do try to do this. They try to hold it over players. These incentive type moments where they're like, look, you're not going to get to this. And then the player isn't performing as good as they can because they know they're being held out for that reason. Or it becomes something there where they start to think that their manager's against them. And I don't think that's a positive way to go. I think that right there was a bad moment by the Pirates. And no matter how good Paul Skeens is, and no matter how good O'Neill Cruz is, they're going to look at that and they're going to go, that was crappy by you. And I don't know if I'm going to play like Chris Bryant. Obviously, he never turned out to be the Chris Bryant we thought he would be.
True.
But at the same time, he never liked the Cubs again. He always hated that franchise for the way they treated him his rookie year.
By the way, I'm responding to some people. I misspoke. I'm sorry. I meant to win. They still have the chance to win the division for the first time since 06, not make the playoffs.
Also,
I'm going to get back to that person.
The Peace-a-thon person?
Yes.
All right. That sounds really cool. And lastly, and Alec, I want you to be assured that I did not bring this story to the table because of you. This is about Jackson Holliday, all right? The Baltimore Orioles clinched, Kevin. And they set up a Jackson Holliday baby bird station. Because Jackson Holliday is not 21 years old, so they got him bottles of sparkling grape juice, a mini Jackson Holliday jersey, and some coloring book, like Orioles, and they colored it in like they were six-year-olds. Maybe it was actually some of the players' kids.
Okay.
And right there it says, baby's first clinchmas. So he gets to celebrate clinchmas, but he has to do it at his own baby bird station because he looks like he's still 12.
I could see that. I have to admit, I thought he was having a baby. So I'm serious, okay? So I just saw the video of him, like, with a little onesie jersey mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And I thought, oh, that's neat. He's having a baby, and they just clinched the playoffs. I did not hear what they were saying. I did not look into it any further. So when you said that, I was like, oh, I thought he was for real having a baby. This was new information to me.
Yeah, and that's the it's fun, and I think it's really fun. Clubhouses have a really good time with each other. You're supposed to have fun. He's smiling real big. The big deal is they're going to the playoffs. That's why he's excited about that, and he's ready to be part of that. Good luck to everybody, because the Orioles are young and very good at baseball right now.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. We're working on the YouTube. I understand people are concerned. We are working on that. Coming up next, Dallas Cowboys insider Mickey Spagnuolo. Plus, I'm just curious your thoughts. Who's under more pressure to win a Super Bowl? Is it Dak or Lamar? Let's do it all next right here on The Fan.